Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, snowy Minneapolis and our listeners out there. I'm Don Allen, your co-host with Mr. Ron Edwards. Mr. Edwards, what do you think about all this snow today up here in Minneapolis?
Well, first of all, Don, how you doing?
Okay.
We're here in studio. First of all, it's more than Minneapolis. It is the entire upper Midwest.
This is a
massive front that is impacting from the Dakotas all the way out to the Ohio Valley. But it is a monster here. Right now, we're looking at the Weather Channel here in studio. Right now, we're at in Oakdale, which is a suburb just outside of St. Paul, Minnesota. They have already recorded 20 inches of snow. We have 15 inches of snow in Minneapolis, in downtown Minneapolis, where we are situated with our studios. We're looking for wind chills tomorrow of 35 below zero.
Wow.
And as much as a possible 18 to 20 inches of snow, the city is shut down. The Minnesota Department of Transportation in the southern part of the state, including Twin Cities, have pulled their plows off the roads, if you will. Highway Interstate 90 between Albert Lea to the South Dakota border, that's Sioux Falls, has been closed for the last 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, for those that like to talk about a white Christmas, you're guaranteed that. In fact, as we're talking right now, we're looking out over the city, and you can see the snow is just blowing, and it's continuing to snow. So it's been snowing now for about, for about 15 hours.
Yeah, 15 hours straight. Yeah, I filmed two videos this morning and sent it to my extended family out of town here in D.C. just so they could see the craziness up here, the snow all the way up to the door, and just this crazy, ridiculous weather that we're getting. But, you know, as living in Minnesota, you get used to this format of weather.
So. You have to. I mean, they're now saying, though, that this could be the fifth worst blizzard in the history of the state of Minnesota, or since they started keeping records around 1890. So this is a monster. I've been watching folks stuck in parking lots, if you will, Don, as we talked about earlier in pre-preparation for this afternoon's program. It's a monster. What bothers me, though, is the cold. I can handle the snow, but when you start talking about wind chills of 35 below zero or better, that's when it gets serious. So, but now to our international audience, our friends in Canada, they're used to this all the time, buddy.
Yes. And before we move on, I'd just like to let people know this is a live call-in talk radio program, and the number that you can call toll-free is 1-877-572-4288. Again, that number is 1-877-572-4288. We invite your calls. Now,
Don, one other quick piece before the diehard Minnesota fans. Congratulations again, Tubby Smith. Minnesota Golden Gophers go to 9-1, defeat Eastern Kentucky, who somewhere or another got in here. Though the University of Minnesota is shut down, they allowed under special provisions for the game to go on at Williams Arena. And Tubby's young men got the deal done by about 15 points, and so congratulations to them. 9-1, Tubby Smith. Diehard Minnesota fans out there watching the game earlier this afternoon. Okay, go ahead.
All right. That's great. Congratulations to those Golden Gophers over there. Well, rolling right along here, Mr. Edwards, we are really proud. And I was telling him this earlier. I was telling our guest today that I was just tickled that he was going to be on our show. On our show, and I was so excited. It was like seeing my expression was like seeing Prince in the women's shoe department at Macy's.
But let me clarify.
Let me clean that up. Let me clean that up a little, okay? Every time I've seen Prince in downtown Minneapolis, he's either been coming in Macy's. You know when you go in off 7th Street, the first
right.
Door you go in there, you have the women's shoe department.
Yeah.
So not that he was there trying shoes because I don't want nobody to go back and say that I was talking crazy about him because – if anybody has a problem with Prince, you have a problem with me. That's just how I feel about him.
He's all right, dude.
But anyway, moving right along, we are glad to have a former Minnesota Viking, Chris Dolman, with us. A little history. Chris was selected by the Minnesota Vikings in the first round, fourth overall, of the 1985 draft, NFL draft, and began his NFL career as an outside linebacker for the Vikings' 3-4 defense. However, the team switched to a 4-3 defense earlier in his career. The move paid off for Dolman, who recorded 21 sacks in the 1989 season, the highest total recorded that season and the third highest total overall. Dolman later played for the Atlanta Falcons and the San Francisco 49ers before returning to the Vikings for the 1999 season, his final season. Chris is one of the three top 10 rushers in NFL history among 26 semifinalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Dolman is encouraged and moved by the possibility to be ever enshrined in the NFL Hall of Fame. Mr. Dolman, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be
yes,
here.
Yes, definitely glad to have you with us. Let me just say a small piece as it pertains to that bio that you gave, Don Allen and Chris. Chris was always one of my favorite players, and I very much enjoyed watching him, particularly doing his first stint with the Vikings. I've always felt that as it pertains to the legend of the Minnesota Vikings, he ranks right up there with Carl Eller, Alan Page, Jim Marshall. And that's how I viewed him. And so he gave me many satisfying moments as a fan, as a Viking fan, as I watched him excel at his position with the Minnesota Vikings. And I can well remember when he left the Vikings that first time, how disappointed and upset I was, because he's the type of player that a franchise should have made sure that they kept him for the duration. But Chris, it's just a pleasure. It's an honor, in fact, to have you on our program On Point this afternoon.
The honor's all mine. I really appreciate the kind words. And I tell you what, you know, Minnesota is definitely a special place in my heart. I got family there. I'm looking forward to coming back next week. Actually, I got the 50-year reunion. Well, actually, the 50 greatest players in Viking history. And I was fortunate enough to make that cut, and they're bringing all of us back for the Bears game. Now, only if the weather cooperates, because I live down here in Atlanta, and if it's storming like that now, we have another one next week. I don't know how well it's going to, you know, pay off.
Now you know the Vikings are going to insist that you be there. They'll make preparations if they have to bring you in a couple days early. But by the way, we've already looked at the advanced weather forecast, and we're supposed to have, though, to be cold, clear and basically sunny Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and into the game with the Bears. So
great.
We'll be looking to see you. Let me ask you a couple questions, Chris.
Sure.
You are now eligible, have been eligible for a couple years for Canton, correct?
Correct.
For the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your status? And what did you pick up in votes during the first round of voting?
Well, you know, this is usually the toughest part right here, the semifinalist list. You know, I've made the semifinalist list. I think I've been up for four or five times, and I made it four out of the five times.
Mm-hmm.
But once you make the semifinalist, then they go finalists, which they pick in January, in the first part of January. It could be.
Hello?
Hello?
I think we may have lost reception with Chris. Hopefully he'll get back to us.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, with the weather, Don, I'm just not surprised. Let's see if we can get him back.
Yeah, I think he's calling from his cell phone, and sometimes the cell phones kind of drop out there, so maybe he'll call.
Right, not
here he
good.
Is. Here he is, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Chris. We lost you for a minute. Go ahead.
Go ahead. But once you make the finalist list, mm-hmm. then you got a chance of you know, becoming a Hall of Famer. You know, it's all about, you know, publicity. It's not necessarily – it should be about what you've done on the field and what your numbers are, but it doesn't always end up that way.
Not because of politics, right.
A lot of politics involved.
Now, let me ask you this question for our listeners up here in Minnesota, because many would consider that this was the hallmark of your career. But you also played for the Falcons and San Francisco 49ers. I have to ask you this question: would it be your intention to go into Canton as a Viking?
Well, believe it or not, you don't have a choice.
Is that right? They do it a little bit differently. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have a choice. I cut my teeth in Minnesota. I played the majority of my career in Minnesota. Out of 15 years, I did 10 of them in Minnesota. You know, I would be honored to go in as a Viking. You look at the history of Minnesota and the players that they have in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you go all the way back to Gary Zimmerman, to Alan Page, to Carl Eller. I mean, you know, Johnny Randall, Randall McDaniel. These are all great, great players. And, you know, to join those guys, I mean, it would be just an honor.
Okay. Now, your last season was 1999. Denny Green was your coach. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, Denny Green, one of the great ones, one of the few to be honored to be a black head coach in the National Football League, which is, a subject that for another time that we deal with here. And I remember seeing you out at Winter Park. I used to come out there and visit in that final season. Let me just ask you a question, Chris. What's your take on the game as your? I mean, you've been out of the game basically over a decade. What's your take on the game?
Well, I think the game is being over officiated. I think that I understand that you want to protect players, but make the protection equal to all players, not just to offensive players or quarterbacks. The thing about concussions, guys have been getting concussions from day one. The league knew it. The owners knew it. Now all of a sudden it's coming out in front of the media and the fans. Now it's this big thing where that we got to protect, players and the integrity of the game. One of the things that the NFL will always, always do, they will throw anybody, including mama, under the bus to protect, their image. And that's just the way it is. And, you had quarterbacks. When I first came in the league, the first quarterback I lined up against was Steve Grogan. I mean, now, Steve Grogan was, he was a quarterback for the Patriots, a no-nonsense guy. This guy wore Necro. So he wasn't worried about the fact that someone was going to come up and hit him. He was going to bring the wood to you. So, with those types of mentality, then you go into the more modern era and recent players. I mean, you had guys who had who were susceptible to more concussions. You had Aikman who got a lot of concussions. You had Steve Young who got a lot of concussions. And those guys there all of a sudden changed all the rules. You can't hit the quarterback. And it really, at that point in time, I think they just started to just change how we're going to play the game of football. And today, as you watch the game, it's more like a 7-on-7 drill, which is something that we do in practice every day. Is basically the skilled people, your wide receivers and quarterback and running backs against linebackers and safeties. And no defensive lineman, no offensive lineman. They're totally taken out of the game. And that's
right.
What the game has pretty much become to.
It's good. It's interesting, and it's refreshing to hear you talk in terms of not necessarily kowtowing to the NFL, because you're absolutely right. Give me your take on James Harrison, Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, is it a feeling amongst the players past and current that Harrison is being picked on? I mean, to me, he's one of the most outstanding defensive players in the game today, yet all of a sudden the NFL's taken about $125,000 out of his pocket. He can't sneeze. I mean, is he being targeted, and does the NFL do that? Target?
Well, I don't want to say that they do target, but if, my thing is this here. James Harrison, if he's playing within the structure of the game, just because, if he's playing within the structure of the game, and he hits you, that's part of the game. That's all part of the game.
Okay.
That's all what they're paying you to do. See, and what has happened And the coordinators have gotten smarter. Okay, we can't hit the quarterback. You cannot hit the quarterback at all. So now let's just, the next guy who touched the ball, let's knock the crap out of him. And that's what
receivers and running backs, right.
Receivers
right.
and running backs.
Right.
So
let me ask you one additional question here before I turn it over to Mr. Allen. You came up at the same time that the current interim, though I think he should be the head coach, Leslie Frazier. What do you think are his chances to become a permanent head coach in the NFL?
Well, his chances are very good. I think, Leslie's always been on the short list, and I get tired of that term, short list. I mean, if the guy is qualified, hire him.
Seven times he's been interviewed. Right, okay.
Right. I mean, why are you interviewing him if he's not qualified? Are you just doing it to appease the public and say, oh, we're trying?
And meet the Rooney rule.
There you go. I get sick and tired of hiring guys that have no football background, so their dad was a coach, their friends were. I mean, I'm serious.
Josh McDaniel at Denver. I got you.
There you go.
Follow it again.
Then on top of that, Josh McDaniel goes out and he hires like three of his buddies that he went to. What was it, McKinley over in Canton, Ohio?
Yeah, right.
The high school.
Yeah.
He hires three of his high school buddies.
Right.
And what in the world they're doing in the National Football League trying to coach professional athletes?
That's right.
Name another profession that you can go off and you can take a guy who's, okay, my old man's a coach or my old man's a doctor. So that automatically makes me qualified as a doctor. Even though I didn't go to school, I'm a doctor. You know, and by the way, I'm going to bring a couple of my friends along with me too so I have a good time.
They may not know what a scalpel is, but they're still going to come in and be in the operation room.
There you go. There you go.
Chris, I got you. One other question I got to ask you, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Cole. Do you care to comment on the Albert Haynesworth situation in Washington?
Is Albert
100% wrong, or is there some medium there? Because I think Mike Shanahan really overstepped himself when he also in the Donovan McNabb situation implied that Donovan McNabb wasn't a very smart human being.
Well, you know what? I think Mike Shanahan has gotten himself in a situation where that, you know, I'm going to come in, and he wanted total control of the team from Dan Snyder. All right,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, you were removed for a few years. This game has changed. You know, the football hasn't changed, but the personalities that play the game has changed.
The culture.
Absolutely. Albert was wrong. You know, I think there should have been more of a meeting of the minds early in the beginning of things. I you look at Albert Haynesworth, but you can also look at Dante Culpepper. You know,
My man visited and was with him and watched him play the UFL game in Omaha. The first week in October, spent some time with him and Denny Green, who, as you may know, is the coach of the Sacramento Mountain Lions of the United Football League. Dante still looks good.
Well, I mean, you know, Dante should be playing in the National Football League.
You're absolutely right.
You bring in a coach who basically sold himself as a guy who develops talent, and he doesn't do anything. He goes out. He brings in a Hall of Fame quarterback. He pays the guy well. Then he comes back and pays him even better the following year, and the guy's done.
Yeah.
I mean, and he sits around, and he was just basically using that team as his own personal chess game. I mean, I'm bringing Randy Moss. Randy Moss, I don't like him. All right, get rid of him. I mean, you're not the owner.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're an employee just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And it was, we were talking about, Shanahan and Haynesworth. I mean, if these guys would come in and say, hey, look, let's not sit up here and try to bump heads. You know,
right.
It's not a test of wills. Let's just sit up here and try to figure out how we can win ball games, and everybody's going to be happy. But
right.
I can guarantee there's nobody happy in Washington.
Right. And let me just say this for my colleague, Mr. Allen.
Go ahead.
Don, you got two football minds talking here.
Yeah, I see that.
When you introduced Chris, one of the things you pointed out that when he was drafted by the Vikings, well, remember, the Vikings were playing what was called a 3-4 defense. That's where you have three down defensive linemen and four what would be called linebackers. And then right after Chris got there, they recognized his talent, and he went to a 4-3. Well, the reverse happened in Washington. When Albert Haynesworth was in Tennessee, they played a 4-3. He was a very dominant player, pass rusher, run blocker, and et cetera. He gets to Washington, and Shanahan arrives at the same time a year later and decides he wants to go to 3-4-4. And I think Shanahan lost his cool with respect to the audacity of Albert Haynesworth to question the defensive philosophy. The other problem they have there is that Mike Shanahan's son is the offensive coordinator, and I don't think he can begin to know and have as much knowledge as Donovan McNabb. And so this is what Chris and I are kind of back and forth with, having a little fun with, because the other thing that's basically said is that us people of color really don't understand the idiosyncrasies of the game. But, Don, go ahead.
I just like to let people know that you can go online and actually cast your ballot for Chris Dolman for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Canton, Ohio. The website is www.iframe.fanschoice.com. Again, that's www.iframe.fanschoice.com. We're going to have it up on our website here for the Blog Talk Radio Show On Point here right after the show. Just click on that. They're going to ask you to pick. Matter of fact, I'm doing it right now as we speak so I can let people know. You click on it, and it asks you to vote. And so actually on my ballot here, I have Chris Carter. I have Roger Craig. I have Dermonte Dawson, Chris Dolman, and Jerome Bettis are the people that I voted for. It's interactive. You can log in. You can also tweet and share your choices on Facebook. And another thing I like to tell people is that Chris Dolman also has a Facebook fan page. It looks like somebody really professional put that together for him. It says, "Vote Chris Dolman for NFL Hall of Fame." We'd like all our listeners, international and national, if you have a Facebook page, just go in there, look for "Vote Chris Dolman for NFL Hall of Fame," and become a fan. Let's try to get 5,000 fans between now and the end of December. So that's what I have to add in. Is there anything else you'd like to add in, Mr. Dolan?
No, I appreciate everyone's support and throughout the years, and you know, hopefully we can make this a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris, I got to ask you this question because you still have a significant fan base up here in Minnesota, and you've already clarified that you'll be going into the hall as a Viking. Don, this is a question also between the sports minds we have fun with. Now, have you decided, and if you can share it with us, who do you intend to have introduce you on that occasion?
It would be my son.
Is that right? That's beautiful,
yeah.
My brother.
Yeah, I think that is the you know, the passing of the torch. I think that, you know, to have that happen and your son present you is about the highest honor that you can get.
Can you tell us just a little bit about your son? I mean, so that we know and understand, because I got to tell you, that is one of the almost religious-like processes of introduction into the hall is who you have introduced you and how they present you. Just give us a little background on your son, Chris.
Well, my son, he's a sophomore in college right now. He goes to Greensboro College in Greensboro, North Carolina. He's 20 years old, typical kid. He plays basketball, and he enjoyed watching me play.
Okay.
You know, he's my biggest fan. Even when you know, we had our kids when we were young, as far as in our marriage,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted them to know, you know, what their dad did, who he was, you know, and try to lead by that example. One of the things I'm most proud of that, you know, I can sit up here, I can walk in any circles, and my kids can walk in any circles and never hear anything bad said about your dad, and that is, you know, that is worth more than money to me. You know, we're a tight family, we're a close family, and I just want them to realize just how blessed we all are to be where we are today.
All right. And I can, as a father and a grandfather, I certainly have a profound appreciation of that. Mr. Allen, anything else for Mr. Dolman?
Well, I would like to invite any listeners here. Mr. Dolman has a couple minutes while we move ahead. If anybody has anything to ask Chris, call us at 1-877-572-4288. This has been a really good interview, and the number again is 1-877-572-4288. And also, this will be available, this interview will be available on podcast and also on Mr. Dolman's Facebook page, where you can download it and actually listen to it right there on your, on his Facebook page here from On Point.
Don, why don't we give that again so that people know how to access Mr. Dolman's Facebook?
Sure. If you have to have a Facebook page, and you just go in the search area in the top blue bar in the white search area, and you put in Vote Chris Dolman for NFL Hall of Fame. And there you would pull up a page. You will see a top playing card that says Vote Today, along with the Pro Football Hall of Fame Canton, Ohio logo underneath it. And you just become a fan, and don't forget to click on the link to cast your ballot there and cast your ballot. You can do our international listeners. Everybody should just, you know, move toward this and do us that great service here. We just got noticed that the New York Giants are still stuck in Kansas City, and the city of Shakopee has 18 inches of snow right now. So
Oakdale, Minnesota has 20. Minneapolis now is up to 16 and a half inches.
And that just came in over the wire from our good friends. And also, we'd like to give credit to the Minnesota Progressive Talkers Network, which On Point is a affiliate of right now. And we post all this information on our shows on their site. So that's another opportunity. You'll see us around, probably doing a little bit more with them a little later. Also, maybe an interview with the chief head honcho over there, I should say. And he'll probably give us a call sometime here in the future. We'll set up something nice. Other than that, Mr. Edwards, I am not getting any calls in. People are probably out shoveling their snow in Minneapolis.
You're right. You're absolutely right about that. I just want to say to Chris in a public platform, he was clearly one of my heroes. You know, he said at the conclusion of his comments that there will be no one that talks ill of him, his family, et cetera. And that is clearly my recollection of his tenure here, his two terms, if you will, that he was a man that was viewed as a family man, as a community committed person, and et cetera. And there were nothing but good thoughts about him. So to me, it's quite an honor because he was one of my heroes. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate the opportunity.
I appreciate that. But, you know, this is a day and age we live in, is that the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You look at our society, the more dysfunctional you are, the more of a likelihood of you to have a reality show. They want to display you, you know, across the world. And it's really sad. I think, you know, as you know, a man in America, an African-American man in America, we really need to reevaluate our lives and how we're living them and how
Absolutely.
We have to become more positive for our next generation. And,
right.
and because, I mean, you know, you only, you know, it's you are viewed by the things that you've given in your life, not by the things you've received. And you cannot think it's all about you. Because if your parents thought the same way that you're thinking, then you wouldn't be around. Or
That's
you possibly
right.
wouldn't be successful.
So,
you know, it's a situation where that, you know, we have to look back and say, what can we do to make this world a little bit better for all of us? And
understanding
I mean,
that we
guys,
only pass this way once.
Absolutely. And
absolutely.
Some of us have huge, huge platforms to stand on, and only thing we do is try to collect as many things that we can so we can show it off in front of the people that we really should be giving back to.
Right. All right, Mr. Dolman, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Yep, we appreciate it.
We'll be looking forward to the induction at Canton, Ohio.
Well, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, like I said, I spent 15 years. I finished fourth in the history of the league, as you know, at my position. And you know, if you can keep, you can put one, two in, and you know, and you got number four or number three and four staying outside waiting to see what happens.
It's for
you,
know,
you got to really evaluate their system.
There you go. All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Allen, anything?
I'd just like to say to Chris, thanks for calling. Greatly appreciate it. We'll have get an update from you here in a couple of weeks. And we appreciate you calling and spending the time with us. Again, that was our interview today with former Minnesota Viking and Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame semifinalist Chris Dolman. Any closing words?
Mr. Allen, let me just say very quickly, as we're talking, we're looking on our monitors at the Weather Channel. Boy, Minneapolis is really on the map. We're looking at downtown. We're looking at some of the neighborhoods. We're looking at cars stuck in snowdrifts and et cetera. And as Mr. Allen just indicated, we're now at 18 inches or thereabouts. In one of our suburbs, we're at 20 inches. And in Minneapolis itself, we're now being told we're at about 16 and a half inches. And the airport basically is closed. They're able to open, keep one runway open, but only for 30 minutes, and then they have to go back to plowing. And Mr. Allen has just indicated that the AP is announcing the New York Giants are sitting on the runway at the Kansas City International, KCI as it's called, Kansas City International Airport, just north of Kansas City. Don, if they're not able to get off the ground and get in here, you know, before 6 hours, 8 hours before game time, I don't know how they're going to get here.
Yeah. They're definitely not going to rent a bus.
No.
Not a 35, not today. In fact, the news channel is reporting right now the Giants are scheduled to play, but they have not yet arrived. Woo, I tell you. What else we got, my friend? What do we got?
Well, I just want to say thanks, Chris, and then let him go you know, about his way, and then that we'll be keeping in touch with him a little bit later, but and then we can go ahead and move on. And thanks for calling in and having this interview today, sir.
Yes. Don, I wanted Chris, again, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Anytime I can help out, please give me a call.
All right, will do. Will do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Don, I'd been asked to make sure that we had gotten some correspondence, some of our friends in the British Isles, particularly in the area around Manchester, Birmingham, the Midlands. I made some inquiries. Man, they're having some serious problems over there with this whole issue of education, austerity, if you will, as you probably know. Have on computer there in front of you, the British Parliament 2 days ago voted. In fact, the vote was pretty close. It kind of surprised me. I thought it would not be as close on a vote of 321 to 303, I believe. The British Parliament voted to triple tuition.
Wow.
In Britain's institutions of higher learning from like 4,000 to almost 15,000. And something rare happened over there. The reason I was asked to make sure to mention it is that basically the royals, as they are referred to, of course, this is the British royal house, are basically above, you know, the common fray, if you will. But Prince Charles and his wife, Prince Charles being the heir to the British throne, and their automobile was attacked doing disturbances and fightings inside of London around Trafalgar Square and et cetera. And this is a very serious situation over there. Some of my British friends had indicated they certainly, you know, hoped that we would say a little bit about it, and they are some of our loyalist listeners and, again, identify Manchester, London, Birmingham, and the Midlands.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to go down this week, Mr. Edwards, and I guess we'd want to start with the police chief's memo being leaked that defended the seven officers involved in beating Mr. Daryl Jenkins. And if you guys like to see a picture of Daryl Jenkins directly after the beating, you can go to the Independent Business News Network, which is IBNNnews.com. That's I, B as in boy, N, N, news, one word, .com. and just scroll down there, you will see also the AP video of several police officers beating the stew out of this guy. But again, Mr. Edwards was quoted in the St. Paul Pioneer Press story. So what we've done there is we've took a couple of lines from the Pioneer Press and directed a link back to the original story to give them full credit. It's a story written by Mr. David Hanners.
Yes, and by the way, this is quite embarrassing to the Dolan / Ryback administration, Ryback being the mayor, because the chief had been talking out of both sides of his mouth, as he normally does, and he had, on the occasion of the brutal beating of Mr. Jenkins, he had even gone so far as to play a game with the FBI and indicating he was going to ask the FBI to investigate the brutal beating of Mr. Jenkins. By the way, Mr. Jenkins was, there was a settlement with Mr. Jenkins for about $150,000, as well as the city paid $85,000 to his attorneys. The chief indicated concerned he was, and et cetera. Well, this memo, which was intercepted by the St. Paul Pioneer Press, which is the other major paper in our sister city across the river, intercepted this memo, and what the chief said is, you know, I kind of criticize you guys, but, you know, actually both of us were right, but you got to do what you're going to do, and this is how we train you. Well, I sat for 5 years as the co-chair of the federally appointed Police Community Relations Council, as we mentioned on this program since our debut in May of this year. And the chief used to sit and spin fairy tales to us, Mr. Allen, about the wonderful things they were doing in changing their training tactics and philosophy and et cetera. And, you know, sitting there in those meetings, and we had many, many meetings. We had probably over 100 and some meetings in that 5 years that we were mandated by the federal government to watch over the police department. And I used to sit there and know that this guy was just lying through his teeth. But he wasn't supposed to get caught. I mean, this memo was not supposed to come to light. Somebody, in fact, I understand from interviewing with the reporter, Mr. David Hanners, that there apparently was a number of sources who leaked the memo. But it reflects the real chief of this department and what he's really about. You know what I'm saying? By the way, on that particular note, it appears that a situation is being set. The chief has another 2 years on his term. But quietly, the department announced yesterday morning, that a female inspector has now been appointed assistant chief of the department, which means that she is an heir apparent to become the next chief of the department. Nobody's really talking about that, you know?
Politics
is something else, my man.
Yes, it is. It most certainly is. If they'll give you from the left, they'll certainly stomp you on the right.
On the right. Yes, sir. What else we got, Don?
Well, you know, we were privileged to find out at the last minute that the Minneapolis Public Schools Oversight Committee for the new district headquarters was having a meeting on this last past Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning, and it was for community input. Actually, Mr. Edwards, so people know what we're saying here, there was a press release put out to the mainstream media that Minneapolis Public Schools Diversity Oversight Committee for the new district headquarters project seeks community input. And so it was sent to the mainstream media and some minority ethnic outlets after deadlines. So what had happened was the community didn't know about it, but the community members that were there, Mr. Edwards, I guess was me and you and a couple other folks. Total of what?
That's correct.
Six. Mm-hmm. Total of six of us from the community to a group of employees and committee members that were there they outweighed the number of community members that were there. Just put it like that.
Yes, that's right.
And we also, and I just wanted to go into some detail on that. We also have some video on that because we did film Velma Corbell, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights director, and also Lynn Littlejohn, who works for Mortenson Construction. But more importantly, at that meeting, I was able to present our community benefits agreement from the ad hoc group, the North Minneapolis Fair Commerce Task Force.
Yes, yes.
And gotten a little response right now, Mr. Edwards, on that, and hopefully they will call us to the table, the group, informal ad hoc group to discuss possibly moving forward with community benefits agreement, because that's an important piece of the pie. And
particularly
also,
in the Ms. Littlejohn in the meeting on Tuesday made what has become a boilerplate pronouncement by Mortenson Construction, and that is that they intend for 25% of the workforce to be protected class, minorities, and et cetera. They always come up with that number, and as has been reported by a very prestigious international firm which deals with research on studies on diversity, that's an impossibility, because we now know that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department never monitored or reviewed any of the numbers that were crunched and given to them by white contractors in this city. And we all kind of laughed in that meeting. By the way, I think it's important for both our international and domestic audience to know that what was touted, as Mr. Allen just read from the official press release of Minneapolis Public School District Number 1, a community meeting for the community's input, that in a 92-minute meeting dominated by the district and by Mortenson. By the way, the black company, Legacy, had no representative. Wasn't that interesting? But anyways, the community was allowed approximately 9 minutes.
Mm. Yes.
You remember? There were three speakers, restricted to 3 minutes each. Three people spoke. That turns out to be a little over 9 minutes, because two of them were allowed to at least stand up and asked if there was going to be any response to the questions they asked. So we had a 92-minute meeting that was supposedly to develop reflections by the community, extract information from the community, et cetera, and the community was allowed 9 minutes. That's how we operate up here.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note too, Mr. Edwards, on this whole school board and the closing of North High and these
City View's gone.
All this stuff. You know, we have a little contingency of a couple of folks, and they all know who they are, who are strategically in cahoots in a left and transparent way with the Northwest Area Foundation and also Minneapolis Public Schools. And
yes.
So I watched as one of the African-American speakers on Tuesday was pulled out in the hall by an employee of the Minneapolis Public Schools to give him a talking to set the Negro straight. And so
get his mind right.
Get his mind.
Yes. Okay.
Let him find out who the HNIC is. But, you know, I'm looking at that, and then Soul Sister, Black Power, Gawa, that's on a local radio station here, who was really gung-ho and positive and, yeah, brother, let's get this community benefits agreement. And I'm going to leave her nameless at this point, but she knows who she is, decided to back off from it because it was too much for her. It was too detailed. And she didn't understand the significant responsibilities involved in it. And they are actually – this is what happens here in Minneapolis in our black community. We get fractured because there's a group that's having a meeting on Monday night at 6:30. I don't have the location or details. I just had heard it on last Thursday. But I'm pretty sure someone will call me, and I plan on going to that meeting and verbally putting my foot in their butt. Because this is not, you know, either you work on the same page together, and, I mean, I could ride on your train, you can ride on my train, and then at points we get together and we ride the same train because we're all going after the same end game, which is the most important thing, the education.
Now, what is this meeting about Monday, Don?
It's the formation of this ad hoc group to address things like the Black Power movement, some movement. And
I see that this person that you're talking about. Now, how does that play out with the Northwest Area Foundation, who is sponsoring the program that this person is on, which means that they have to sign off? I mean, how does that sit with the Northwest Area Foundation? Because they are certainly not about the business of Black Power.
No, not at all. And that's something that we're going to, on Monday morning, we're going to kind of put it out there in a bigger way on the blogs and on the YouTube, because I filmed a little piece of myself that I want to get out there about this particular situation, because, you know, you can go hoot and holler all you want, but when there's action time and you kind of back up and get scared and run, I mean, I understand a person wanting to keep a job, but you know that if you went this direction, they threaten you anyway. So,
absolutely.
But they're still
go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They're just still in their comfort area. So,
let me ask you a question about this. I well remember that when the intel came to us that this special committee was being put together by the school district to quote unquote shepherd and watch out for compliance on the school district. I call it the Crystal Palace. It's now up to $37.5 million. You made inquiry. We have the documents and emails in the files, if you will. You made inquiry of Director Velma Carvel of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, who we knew was a member of the committee, as well as the communications staff of the district. And weren't we told that no such committee existed and that obviously we were smoking something or didn't know what we were talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was the same committee we walked in at on 8:30 this past Tuesday morning.
Exactly.
In the assembly room at 807, right?
Yes. Exactly.
807, for our listeners, is the address of the district's headquarters.
Well, Mr. Edwards, just to be transparent, you know, when we first contacted them, or when I first contacted them, I said, hey, who is the list of names? What is this group? And I said, oh, well, we have to check because we don't really know what you're talking about here. And so it's the situation of the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing because, you know, they have the Department of Diversity and Equity, and then you have the Communications Department of
uh-huh.
the public schools. Well, this group was actually put together by the Office of Diversity and Equity at the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Mr. James Burroughs, the director. That's right. He sure didn't he?
And unbeknownst to the communications department, which I feel it should be critical that, you know, that group over there knows what's going on also. So
now, how does this group differ from the group put together by Mortensen of the two ecumenical ministers and the so-called education guru who was a part of the Saturday group? By the way, I bet you they didn't meet this morning at UROC. But now, how does that group, the Mortensen Oversight Committee, are there companion relationships there between them? Is that what we're to understand?
You know, I allege that there is some collusion and some possible violations of some racketeering acts going on as it pertains to the distribution of monies between the two entities. And I know these people aren't doing this for free. Especially the Mortensen group, because that's,
absolutely not.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
more of a hush money type situation. You know, this, you know, walk us through there, and you know, the community in North Minneapolis has been pretty much boondoggled and been what do you call it, bamboozled by this group of self-appointed spokespersons with no black consciousness.
Right.
And so what happens is that you have this group there, and they're not really looking to do anything but line their pockets as, you know, the head of the NAACP here in Minneapolis or Minnesota so eloquently wrote in the Spokesman Recorder not less than a week ago. And so
2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. You're talking about young Booker T. Hodges. Now, just by the way, just reelected as president of the Minneapolis branch at the NAACP, talking about the traditional hustlers and pimps who prey on the community. Yeah, you're absolutely correct on that. By the way, we asked a question because there was another meeting, Mr. Allen. I mean, now we're one thing about our community, we're just full of little meetings, nothing. We had a meeting in the city council chambers, which you and I attended, in which,
yes,
again, Velma Carvel, because this all ties into what we've been saying for the last 8 or 9 minutes, Velma Carvel thought that she was going to get total and absolute authorization from the Minneapolis City Council to move ahead with another scam. They blindsided her. And in fact, they've told her, for our domestic and particularly our Twin Cities listeners who are peeking in, that she has been told to come back on the 17th of December before the full council and give greater detail and specificity to what it was she was proposing. Now, one of the things she was proposing In the diversity recommendations, which she forgot to make available to the public, there was this thing about the creation of a contract compliance committee. And lo and behold, don't you know that she set aside, or wants the council to set aside $50,000 so that her friends can get stipends as they serve on that committee.
Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous because, you know, we both sat in that meeting up there, Mr. Edwards, and I actually posted the story that Minneapolis City Council sends Civil Rights Director Corbell back to the drawing board on disparity report and recommendations and her plan.
And they certainly did.
Yeah, so she got her first taste of strong council, weak mayor politics on that particular day. And one thing I'd like to get into real quick here is contract compliance as it pertains to city ordinance and the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Now, we've known for at least 13 years that, first of all, there was no disparity report done, so the numbers was off. And even before Ms. Corbell got there, you had three previous directors that had no black consciousness whatsoever, especially when they went home. And so there was nothing getting done. Second of all, like I spoke on the last show, I visited contractors that have city contracts in Minneapolis that said, hey, they haven't been out here and they haven't even asked me for an affirmative action report. Now, to those that are listening that are thinking, okay, why are, you know, affirmative action? Why do black people got to do that and do this? I want to explain something to you here, okay? As it pertains to things like MnDOT, City of Minneapolis contracts, there is enough money to go around and make everybody happy. Believe me, okay? Secondly, the process that they have within the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights contract compliance, if it functioned for people of color, it would more so make things better for non-people of color that are contractors here. It would be a transparent process. There would be a bidding and estimation class. There would be things that brought contractors in, got them certified, and put you out there to work, okay? Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights is not doing this. They're not Johnny Burns, the contract compliance manager. And before him, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, Marvin Corky Taylor is a friend, but there was really no push to drive compliance as it pertains for the contractor or community engagement as it pertains to people that want to do business of the city. So when you look at the disparity report, you see that out of a pool of 22% for professional services, they barely, you know, pointed to 5% of that. Which any any city of the size of Minneapolis, you're using 22 and beyond just to get the message across. Another thing Corbell stated in that Thursday meeting is she wanted to talk about technology. Well, the technology she's talking about is the Facebook, the Twitter, the social media stuff, the stuff that those people play on all day while they're in office, okay? And if they can't figure out a way to adjust that for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, well, good riddance to them, you know, because it just doesn't make any sense. They don't have a functioning flow chart. And go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Well, you know, what's interesting on that, and certainly we are compelled, as again, with respect to transparency, it was this time, right around this hour, a week ago, that we had to be reporting that we were blocked. Mr. Allen and myself, as members of the Free Black Press here in the Twin Cities, were stopped by a representative, a little tough Irish guy, who told Mr. Allen, I was en route, and it was necessary for Mr. Allen to call me and tell me don't bother to come. But this was a meeting in which monies were being discussed with a Federal Assistant Secretary of DOT. And Mr. Allen, who will explain the situation because he was there, was told that he could not enter the meeting with this United States Secretary of Department of Transportation. And then a couple hours later, in the ballroom of the Millennium Hotel in downtown Minneapolis, Mr. Allen was threatened by a Caucasian by the name of Tim Kennedy, who actually issued terroristic threats against Mr. Allen and told him that he should step outside, and which I, you know, had to certainly be concerned. There were people at the table, including Mr. Allen's wife. We had asked for an apology from MITA. And I got to tell you, I've been really disappointed in light of this terroristic threat against you and other members of the Free Black Press by this Kennedy, Tim Kennedy, that the responsible leadership of MITA, Metropolitan Enterprise, has declined to meet with us and discuss an apology. Is there any update on this, Mr. Allen?
No, it's actually, the Minneapolis Economic Development Association, MEDA, led by Executive Director Yvonne Chung Ho, who is actually a really good person. The problem comes into play when Mr. Kennedy sits at the board or at the table with the National Association of Minority Contractors to filter dollars from agencies like MnDOT and others back to MEDA. Now, I don't know what he's done or what they've done with the dollars. I've seen nothing advertised in papers and blogs and new and radio stations I listen and read and watch about the successful measurable outcomes. But it's like it's more of a plantation owner mentality. Like, okay, they can't do it. We have this agency here. We'll do it. And so a lot of people are offended and set off by Mr. Kennedy's actions. And so that night, that day when I went after that luncheon where I was invited as a member of the Free Black Press to come up there, and Camille Hauser, the U.S. Department of Transportation civil rights person, one of the most powerful civil rights persons in the country, was there to address mostly white contractors and some board members of the National Association of Minority Contractors. He actually came, got in my face and says, you can't be here. You weren't invited. You're going to have to go. I said, wait,
right,
what?
Right.
And rather than, he was confrontational there. And I'm looking at him and say, okay, I got to defuse this situation. Because 10 years ago, it would have been a total different circumstance, okay? So I walked out and I said, okay, that's just be an interview that I'll lose, And I've interviewed people like Ms. Claiborne, the FCC commissioner. I mean, I have a list of good interviews, and I was just going to add that to my list. And so I came back and I wrote a story right away that, Minneapolis Economic Development Agency's representative blocked Black Free Press. And it wasn't.
Is it the Minneapolis or Metropolitan?
It's the Minneapolis Economic Leader. Minneapolis.
Oh, that's what they call it now. Okay, gotcha.
And so he walked up to the table and says, you owe me an apology. Very gun-ho, red in the face, like he wanted to fight. And then he wanted, let's step outside. And says,
with a drink in his hand, too, by the way.
Exactly. And then, why am I going to step outside? And it shocked the lady next to me that was a representative from the University of Minnesota Office of a Business and Community Economic Development, that she left and never came back.
She certainly did. Before the secretary was able to give her speech. Go right ahead. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
And so, my wife, who was talking to a friend at another table, came over and was very uncomfortable and wanted to leave. And so since she is the boss, we left even before Camille Hauser got up to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very shocking.
Well, here's what we found out since that time, and actually before the end of the evening. Assistant Secretary Hauser, in the so-called closed session that Mr. Kennedy wanted to make sure was blocked from any black journalist being present, in that meeting, as she was later to repeat at the dinner a week ago tonight, that she was extremely... and the Obama administration were extremely disturbed by the deplorable results in the state of Minnesota as it pertains to diversity with respect to federal funds for highways, roadways, and et cetera. And I realized sitting there last Saturday night that she had said exactly the same thing. It was later confirmed to me in the middle of the week. She had said exactly the same thing to a gathering. In fact, on last week's program, when you reported the incident at 11:15 a.m. that morning, you pointed out that you had seen a large number of the largest white construction contractors in the state of Minnesota. I mean, Krause Anderson, Forsberg, Mortenson, and those companies. And I'm now made to understand that what was we were not supposed to be allowed to hear was the give and take, where she actually called out some of these major white contractors and et cetera, who all belong to the American Chamber of Commerce. And we know the attack that's been led by the American Chamber of Commerce against the Obama administration, and in some contexts it's very racist. But I understood that, but to her credit, the secretary, Ms. Hauser, repeated to some degree, and she modified for the purpose of the gathering, she indicated her extreme dissatisfaction and gave notification that the federal government intends to return in early 2011 with investigators to make a determination with respect to the future of federal funding for major highway projects and other kinds of projects under the control and auspices of the Department of Transportation. And that's what these folks were blocking, Mr. Allen. And, you know, now I understand the venom that I saw being displayed by Mr. Kennedy and by extension the media group. And I saw him in a discussion after you and your wife and others left the table. I saw him in discussions with some major white contractors, and, you know, they were kind of patting him on the back for, quote-unquote, getting Negroes, putting Negroes in their place kind of thing. That was the kind of the discussion was going on. Though later he came to the table, attempted to explain why you were a bad person and extended his apology for his conduct in my presence, which I told him I didn't accept that apology at this particular time, and I was trying to listen to Assistant Secretary Hauser. But I guess I'm greatly disappointed, Mr. Allen, that the leadership of MEDA has chose not to address these terroristic acts by Mr. Kennedy, who I now am told conducts himself in that manner quite a bit with contractors of color in the course of dealing with the fact they don't get any contracts. So now I guess I have a better understanding of what MEDA's real role is.
Yes, exactly. And so it can be other contracts or other nonprofit agencies. If, you know, you can't sit at this table. Well, I guess you can sit at the table and have a hidden agenda. And his agenda is basically to guide items of interest over to MEDA. I mean, if that's his job, we ask that he be a little bit more transparent. I know the National Association of Minority Contractors, I think they have another meeting coming up in January. I will be there. And I also think that there's a collaborative meeting coming up this week with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I plan on being at that one too. And And so with that said, you know, we have to watch, you know, very closely the dealings, and I'm going to really turn the screws on this because this is absolutely uncalled for, and I think the guy's out of line.
Now, I understand that this is also the same Timothy Kennedy, who has been doing quite a job on Louis King and OIC, that he has really undermined their attempts to do some things in the area of training, particularly on highway projects and such. Is this the same Kennedy? Are we talking about the same individual?
This is the same guy who, you know, he has his own agenda, and I've seen Mr. King at meetings address him directly after a comment he's made, and so you know, you're absolutely right. This is the same person. This is the same Tim Kennedy that we're going to have to scrutinize under the microscope a little bit harder, and his association with the Minneapolis Economic Development Agency, also called MEDA. Who I went to their gala this year, Mr. Edwards, and it was absolutely wonderful. I had, you know, a great time at that particular gala, but between that time and the time of the interview with Camille Hauser and his behavior, it was ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
Now per last week's program, my understanding is we had a discussion on last week's program. You have filed some kind of complaint with the Inspector General of the Department of Transportation based on the conduct of officials here in Minneapolis and stopping the Free Black Press from coming into a meeting with the Secretary, Assistant Secretary for Diversity, Human Rights, Civil Rights, and et cetera. Have we gotten any feedback yet from the Inspector General on that?
Not a word. I also sent in a complaint email to the reappointed Thomas Sorrell for Minnesota Department of Transportation, the Director of Civil Rights for MnDOT, Mary Prescott, Bernie Alstrano, the Associate Director of MnDOT, and I have not gotten one word or a peep back from any of them.
Okay, so it's we can now assume here in Minnesota that the kind of terroristic conduct of a Tim Kennedy, a Caucasian, who takes pride in presiding over the obstruction of black opportunity and et cetera, that's considered to be okay. I mean, I guess I understand that. I just want to move away from that because you just mentioned some with respect to reappointments. This morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, reporting that appears the only person of color playing a significant role with now governor confirmed and elect Mark Dayton is the longtime civil rights icon Josie Johnson, who we had not heard from for a number of years. But she is the co-chair of the transition team of Governor Dayton. And by the way, are we expecting any kind of report from our elected state and federal officials about their meeting with Governor-elect Mark Dayton the day before Thanksgiving and the list that they gave him of their friends that they wanted to have appointed to positions? Did we get a community report on that?
You know, it's very interesting that you bring that up because, as you know, Mr. Edwards, and I'll leave these names, the persons, individuals' names, and we'll leave them anonymous, but here's what happened. People had called out and asked, you know, different communities. These are professional people in our community that some of them I really respect, some of them I don't give a hoot about. But the ones I respect were asked to send their resumes to people like Kenya McKnight, send their resumes to Headwaters Foundation, you know, mail them here, mail them there, that they were, and to Bill Davis. He asked that resumes be mailed to him and cover letters and what positions that you were interested
in. And Bill Davis is the head of the Minneapolis Cap Agency here in Minneapolis, correct? Is that same deal, Bill Davis? Because we have
same Bill Davis. Same Bill Davis.
Okay.
And after I further inquired on, you know, a couple of key people that I really respect, I called and said, "Hey," to an insider in Dayton's campaign, I said, "Did you get these resumes and information delivered to you?" And they had no clue what I was talking about. You know, I almost felt like an idiot talking to them because they were like, "Well, what are you talking about?" I said, "No, there was this private meeting on the 15th, I mean, on the day before Thanksgiving, the 23rd, in November at the Urban League, where they were flossing and they were to deliver all these names and resumes of, you know, and they're telling community members to mail, I would call, private information out to these political midgets to hustle up and bring in front of Mr. Dayton. But what I did hear is that he got some resumes, but resumes of people that they wanted to put forward.
And okay.
We don't know.
Now, that makes sense because his chief of staff, and I have to say this for the purpose of transparency and historical relevance, his chief of staff is a Caucasian woman by the name of Tina Smith, who was just stepped away. I mean, these people can float through these jobs, man. I tell you, it's unbelievable. She was the chief of staff for Mayor R.T. Ryback, who, in fact, pretended that he was going to run against Mark Dayton for mayor. One of the things that Mark Dayton did, by the way, and, you know, we're real big in this state on the endorsement process, but when Democratic Party went to Duluth in the spring of this year to go through that process of the so-called four serious candidates, Mark Dayton declined to go through that process. And there were a number of people in the African-American leadership group that were supporting Intensa or Kelleher, but were not really supporting Mark Dayton per se, right? And I'm being told now that in that meeting the day before Thanksgiving, there was all of this kind of rain-kissing. Yeah, you know what I mean? There's another word to use, but we'll, for the purpose of, you know, family-orientated blog radio, this kissing of the ring. Is that some similar information that you've received with respect to apologizing to the new leader, if you will, and talking terms that they would do whatever was necessary in exchange for their buddies being, quote-unquote, considered for commissionerships, important appointments and commissions and bodies and et cetera. But we never got a report from our two state representatives and our federal congressmen.
No, we didn't get. They don't say a word about nothing. They're flying high by night, and they travel by their own. That creates a big issue just for me personally, being kind of leaning to the right sometimes, and then being progressive sometimes. But we never, or the community, never gets addressed in a way where they're, again, some black consciousness. There's some kind of, yeah, okay, well, I did this move. I'm going to have to tell the community what's going on. You know, there's some sense of, it's like, it's almost taken for granted that, okay, we're going to win. We're the same guys. We're always going to win. They're always going to vote DFL. They're going to put us in office. And so the more that happens, the less information we get.
And absolutely.
And again, Ms. Edwards, what you're saying, they did not tell anybody anything about, you know, excuse my Ebonics, nothing, okay? And so I'm sitting here wondering, you know, if I make an inquiry, it's considered adversarial, but I'm just going to have to make an inquiry because I want to know what was in that meeting, what was passed out, who said what, and why are they not contacting everybody? I mean, these aren't community, these, you know, a few of the people that were there in that meeting has kind of been disenfranchised as community spokesperson.
Right. Let me just cut in with breaking news. We are watching here on our monitors in studio, the major channels here. Channel 5 is reporting the possibility of the cancellation of the Minnesota Viking-New York Giant game tomorrow. And I guess a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Giants may not be able to get into Minnesota. Just want to call attention to our listeners that television station KSTP Channel 5 is getting ready to report that the cancellation. Now, I got to tell you, as Chris Dolman said to us earlier in today's program, as much as the NFL loves money, it's going to be pretty tough seeing the NFL cancel a game because, you know, you got television rights. They don't care if there's five people in the stands, just as long as the game is televised and they get the compensation that they are allowed under the contract. But I have to just cut in and indicate that KSTP is reporting the possible cancellation of the Minnesota Vikings game tomorrow. But we'll know more later on tonight. But go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just, you know, like you're saying there, I don't understand where they get off at just not spreading some information. And the information thing, Mr. Edwards, is not just, you know, these elected officials, but you got to go back to the school board with the email, the press release they sent out to the media outlets. You have to go back to the Urban League, the NAACP, the city of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Their total abandonment of communication with the masses is just heinous. Even the point that you brought up, if people want to see Mr. Edwards in action, I have a video on IBNNnews.com where Mr. Edwards talked to the committee as a whole, city council, and one of the things he brought up that you just saw a mouse drop is that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, no public hearings for more than 10 years. And it was very interesting that he brought that up because I was able to come back, download the video, and actually go look at Minneapolis City Charter 141.40, Substantive and Procedural Powers of the Duties of the Commission. And it simply says in there, which Mr. Edwards confirmed, conduct public meetings and hearings.
Yes.
Okay, and they haven't had a public meeting, or here, a public hearing, in 10 years.
Over 10 years. By rounding it off. And there was, you know, well, of course, the council basically in a situation like that, the rules of the committee of the whole, and, of course, the reason that we, Mr. Allen and myself, were there. And, by the way, again, there was no organizations. There was none of the quote-unquote leadership. There was the Ministerial Alliance wasn't there. The so-called black leadership wasn't there, and et cetera. And this was a very crucial meeting because Ms. Corvell was attempting to get authorization and approval to really begin the dismantling of certain legislation that, at least on paper, appears to give the African-American community some access to the over $6 billion that basically is spent on public projects in this city. And so, you know, when... when you see the council being confronted with the fact, and Mr. Allen just read to you the specific information and the way Mr. Allen operates, that information will be on his log, on his website, excuse me.
Yeah.
And the reason I knew about it, and as I also said in front of the council Thursday morning, you see, I was one of the people that helped draft the civil rights legislation in this city in 1962. You know, we've been around a long time. And I've just been amazed over the last decade how the administration of R.T. Ryback and others have not insisted or required that public hearings be held, public testimony under oath be taken. Maybe we could have dealt with some of these situations and some of these problems. And I appreciate Mr. Allen posting that, if you will, that this is a body, one of the few places that the communities of color can come and at least try to have their voices heard. And yet the Civil Rights Commission, which is touted by the mayor and others as a very valued instrument, if you will, they haven't had a public hearing in over 10 years. They don't take testimony. And going back to another piece, the Minneapolis School District in the meeting Tuesday morning, a 92-minute meeting, and the community was allowed nine minutes, to express their concern about a $37 to $40 million project.
Yeah, and just real quick before we take off on that, I'm back on the city, the Minneapolis City Charter. It just says simply conduct public meetings and hearings and gather, disseminate information to governmental agencies and to the public. The city charter also says commissions should hold public hearings affording all interested parties an opportunity to participate. 30 days prior notice to the hearing shall be published in the Star Tribune newspaper once, in two minority newspapers. Free copies of the proposal rules should be available by the public of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. A tape recording, transcript. I mean, the ordinance, Mr. Edward, lays it all out what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So aren't they in some kind of violation of something somewhere we can tag them on? I mean, I call it bureaucratic collectivism that has no conscience for civil rights. You know?
Well, I think it will take a legal action. I think that we may, particularly given the amount of money that has been denied, and I'm not only talking about access, I'm talking about declarations and statements of intent and then false documents, which indicates hundreds of millions of dollars being paid into the African-American community, which we now know officially, though yours truly as a journalist 20 years ago was trying to tell people it wasn't happening. I think that we could possibly, coming together, have some relief and be able to seek relief from the federal courts. And this is a long, arduous process, and we certainly understand it. But it's something that's long overdue, and I know that there are some people, you and I know, we won't go into names, who are talking in terms of such an action, and I think that that's really where it's at. Also, I think that a recommendation that was made, again, we will not name the officials, if you will, that there needs to be a move afoot, and we need to join with the Native American community as it pertains to their Memorandum of Understanding Agreement, that is now 11 years old, that we need to be moving to block federal dollars from coming into Minneapolis until this whole situation is corrected.
Well, you know, you ask them questions, Mr. Edwards. You really ask them, you know, I go to them and I say, hey, you know, well, what about this? What about that? And, you know, even as much as I don't agree with Don Samuels, if I pass Don Samuels, councilman, Minneapolis Ward 5 councilman,
only African American on the city council.
Yeah. If I pass him in the hallway or outside a public event, you know, he knows that I don't agree with him, and I write really fearlessly about it.
Yes.
But you know what he'll say? He'll say, hello, Mr. Allen. How are you doing today? And I have no choice but to say, I am doing fine, Councilman Samuels. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
And move on my way. Well, this Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights Director Velma Corbell and compliance manager Johnny Burns, they will walk in, they will sniff their nose, they'll stick their nose so far in the air that they rub the chandeliers in the ceiling of City Hall chambers.
And we have beautiful chandeliers in our City Council chambers. Go right ahead.
And I'm like, okay, this is not how you don't like me. I don't like what you do from 9 to 5, okay?
Right.
But at some point, we have to figure out where a middle ground is, okay? That we can give our expertise, we can listen to you, because we know what your expertise is already, but that we can move forward in fixing the huge discrepancies and dilemmas, okay? 2011 has to be a new kind of year. It has to be a fix-it year. Okay, not 18 meetings in 2 weeks and then come to the decision a year later. You know, and that's what they're trying to invoke here, this nonprofit mentality of we can't make a decision until we go around to all the different community groups, like Mortensen. They don't stop by every community group. Oh, and while I'm on a roll, Mr. Edwards, and if anybody out there is listening that understands this, international or national, one of the things on the school district headquarters that Mortensen has done is they've given a charitable donation to a nonprofit called Networks for Better Future to have their people come in, or their reentry personnel to come in, salvage this church area in this building that there's going to be torn down. But they're trying to present that as numbers of diversity. And as you know, when you're doing that in a nonprofit realm, it's nothing more than a tax-deductible donation for the for-profit. Those numbers don't count in no way, shape, or form. So again, you know, with this whole Mortensen Construction, Legacy, Catalyst, Community Partners, and the district, we need to hold these people accountable. Again, on Monday, I'm going to call the district up. I'm going to ask for the superintendent and for the communications director, and I'm going to say, hey, I would like to sit, me and my associate, Mr. Edwards, would like to sit on that oversight committee, because I feel, Mr. Edwards, if you and I got on that oversight committee, we'd have an ally in Louise from the St. Paul Department of Human Rights Equal Opportunity Office, because she put it to Miss Little John on that meeting. Said, well, what was the outreach? I mean, what are you guys doing?
Right. You know, sure did, yeah.
And if you ever notice, when Miss Little John kind of gets flustered, she says, the word is, she says, like, is.
yes, she does. She does.
And I tried really hard not to fall off the chair, but I've seen once she gets flustered, you can look at her and she starts talking. Whenever she gets to the word is, it becomes ills. And I said, oh, my, she got her. And so just little things like that. I mean, yeah, you don't have to like a person, but you should respect the position to an extent, and you should always speak in public. It's just like me and Robin Robinson, who ran for lieutenant governor with Matt and Kenza. I wrote stories.
Yes.
You guys are going to be lucky if you get 20,000 votes. Mm. And I wrote this story, and I put on the story, run, Robin, run. I said, you know, because at a meeting I was at, Mr. Edwards, before the election, before the primary, I think it was, where they kind of got booted out after that, I listened to Ms. Robinson say that I've been in the community more than 25 years. And I asked, well, yeah, you've been in the TV in the community for money 25 years. You have not been in the community for 25 years. So
Absolutely.
Don't come in here and try to befuddle. I mean, as nice as she is, but I have to hold her accountable. So she sent me a message that said, hey, I don't understand how you could say that, and I'll be respectful to you in public, but I'm not going to contact you anymore, which is fine. This is all I can expect. I said, you boondoggle try to befuddle the general public. It's not going to be tolerated. So,
And this is kind of the calling card, if you will, in which a decision has been made. We kind of made a joke earlier in this program, maybe about 20-some minutes ago, that we could rest assured that this morning the group that has been the master plotters in the closing of both North High School and City View apparently have enhanced the letter that they sent out 2 weeks ago supporting the closing of North and are expecting the Star Tribune to publish that letter. This is being handled by Jeffrey Hassan, an attorney here in the city of Minneapolis. His actual name is Jeffrey Goodlow. He was born Jeffrey Goodlow. They've been meeting, and the reason we kind of go in this direction in the last 6 minutes that we have here on point on today's program is that they've been meeting at UROC around 8:30 on every Saturday. And the parking lot is just full of Audis and BMWs and et cetera, Benz. They got a couple of Bentley, you know. And we had sources inside of these meetings which now tell us that, and have been telling us, that these folks who are black, you know what I mean, but I mean, you know, have been well endowed as it pertains to decent job and food on the table, talk about the black community in North Minneapolis like we're savages. And it is really distasteful to hear some of the comments that have been made. Well, I have to say that in this letter that was sent out by Mr. Hassan a couple days ago, in which he wanted concurrence in the letter being sent, they basically said that any dissent from the decisions by Superintendent Johnson to basically close pretty much all the schools in North Minneapolis and force the black community into either non-education or charter schools for profit, that they really don't care what the affected black community says, that these individuals who have been meeting on Saturday mornings, drinking coffee, orange juice, and eating big fat donuts. And this kind of ties in, sir, to what you kind of indicated about the mindset. I mean, there is really a significant gulf, if you will, a division between those who perceive themselves as being the haves against those that are the have-nots. And that's, I think, a mistake, and sometimes that can be a fatal mistake. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% with you. I mean, I'm just sitting back in the cut, you know, watching them operate. And it's good work if you could get it. But you know, I can't judge them, and just the things they're doing, they're just ridiculous. There's no semblance of business acumen or anything. It just doesn't make sense. And so
no, it doesn't. Other than most of the people, some of the people we've named, such as Mr. Hassan and others, are contract employees for the district, and they tend not to mention that. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. They don't at all. They don't try to say a word about that. Well, you know, maybe someone had came to me who obviously has a contract with the district and wanted me to go into full disclosure about what my dealings with the district was.
And you've done that, as I understand.
Yeah. What's that?
You have done that, as I understand.
Yeah. And I told him, I said, first of all, I don't have to tell you anything because I'm not a nonprofit. I said, the agency, why you have to tell all your business is because you took your thing under a nonprofit. What I'm doing for the district is actually going to help out North High. And when it's time for you to know about it, you'll be the first to know about it.
So, I understand this particular person, this contract employee, was the recipient of a $134,000 contract with another individual about a year and a half ago? Yeah.
Yep. $134,770, maybe more. And to start some program, Mr. Edwards, that I just honestly can't tell you, and I don't mean to talk bad about him, but I've never seen him read a newspaper. And so if that's representative for our education, we have some big issues here in the Twin Cities.
Tremendous.
Some huge issues.
Yes. By the way, just on the note of issues, we suffered what will be our 60th homicide last night, young African-American gunned down in the vicinity of 29th Avenue and 4th Street. 5:30, just about nightfall. Police had, in fact, been in the vicinity, but allegedly were not able to catch the assailant, who fled the scene armed and may have exchanged gunfire with the police. But we've lost another young African-American. This now takes us to 60 homicide victims here in Minneapolis.
Wow. Yeah. And then
by the way, take a look at this morning's paper. If you notice, Mr. Allen, as we've been saying to you, the Star Tribune no longer gives the number of homicides in the city, particularly after you and I began a campaign to expose the fact that they were giving our inconsistent and fraudulent numbers with respect to homicides.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Edwards, we have right under 2 minutes remaining in the show, and
okay.
I guess we'd want to wrap up now. And I want people to, if you live in Minneapolis, please tune in tomorrow to Minneapolis Television Network, Channel 17. Mr. Edwards has a show called Black Focus. It's on at 5 p.m. tomorrow in Minneapolis. You'll probably still be stowed in. So 5 p.m., Channel 17, Minneapolis only. Also, read his article in the Spokesman Recorder. And I think I have an article coming out, too, in the Spokesman Recorder this week about Free at Last. Martin Luther King's birthday is celebrated once a year, and so
all right.
it's a nice piece. And then also don't forget to read the Independent Business News Network, IBNNnews.com, and also USA Radical Black, which is USARadicalBlack.com. We'll be back here next week at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. same black station, same black channel. Thank you for listening today. And with 58 seconds left, we're going to play one of my favorites.
Thank you.
Look, this isn't a Romulan labor camp. I don't have to answer your questions. And I don't give a damn what you think.